Good afternoon. It's March the 6th, 2019, and this is your friend Dan in Little Saigon, Seattle. And the topic for this afternoon is the modern state of Israel. I don't mean the ancient state of Israel, which lasted about five centuries. If you want to think of it in terms of a government, you could say it lasted about 500 or 600 years from the end of the period of escape from Egypt, you know, and we could say roughly that's the 12th century BC, 11th or 12th, and maybe we'd say 1500 BC to roughly the time of, roughly the time of the first captivities, which happened in the 6th century and 7th century. So it's about, somewhere between 500 to 700 years, let's call it 500 years, where Israel as a state, an independent government, an independent nation existed. Now, of course, you could say that under the Romans, there was a kind of ostensible independence of the Jews in Palestine, and you could say that there was a kind of Israel, there was a king. But the classic Jewish state of the ancient world really starts with the period that ends with the period of the Judges. And again, the period of the Judges kind of ends around the 12th century BC, 11th century, and the first king that Samuel anoints, which is Saul, and then the second king Samuel anoints, which is David. And that begins that sort of epic of the classic Israeli state. And you could argue that that ends sometime in the 500s or 600s, depending upon, you know, what perspective you want to take. So yeah, 500, 600 years, right? Well, this is not about that. Number one, my background in terms of history is mostly modern history. Number two, in terms of religion and my own attempt at understanding the Bible, I'm still trying to delve into these books that deal specifically with this period. So I'm not claiming to be a perfect historian here. But what I am saying is that this particular podcast is not about that Israel. It's not about the Israel of David, the Israel of Solomon. It's not about the classic Israel, okay? It's about the modern state of Israel that, depending upon how you gauge it, came into existence in 1948, essentially. May the 14th, 1948, the modern state of Israel is established. Now, that's not the beginning of the history of the modern state. The history of the modern state, in many ways, of Israel begins with a man by the name of Theodore Herzl, founder of Zionism, the belief that, and it really was more sophisticated than this, but the essential belief that in order for Jews to be safe, they need to have their own homeland. I may be oversimplifying, but much or most of Zionism was about the desire to have a place, a safe space, to use terminology of today's kids, a safe space to be a Jew. And in defense of this issue, or on the side of this issue, you could say, taking the devil's side, I don't know, maybe not the devil's side, but the point is, there is a history in Europe, certainly over the last couple thousand years, of periodic persecutions of Jewish people. There is this very strange and toxic dynamic between the spread of Christianity over the 2,000-year period, plus or minus, almost 2,000 years, roughly two millennia. And as Christianity spread, and as some other religions spread, like Islam, Jews found themselves caught in the middle and under attack. So this conversation is about that, but I want to kind of think about it in terms of a theme, and it's going to be a theme that's going to piss some people off, maybe. Actually, I kind of hope some people get pissed off. But the theme is the golem. That's the golem. That's spelled G-O-L-E-M. Now, in terms of the Bible, and again, I'm no expert on the Bible. I'm still getting to know it, but in terms of the Bible, there is a passage from Psalms, you know, in the Old Testament, Psalms, Psalm 139, 16, and it goes like this. Your eyes saw my unformed body, all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Now that's just one line, that's really just one part of one psalm. And frankly, a little bit vague. You know, again, I'm no biblical scholar. One of the things you'll understand about golems is that even though in popular culture today, the golem is kind of like a Frankenstein monster, the golem actually exists in Jewish lore as more than that. It's actually part of the creation mythology for some people in Jewish, of the Jewish faith, or at least, you know, back in the day, so to speak. The most famous person or golem or person to talk about golems involves a rabbi who lived in Prague, that's Prague, Czechoslovakia, in the 16th century. And this rabbi was named Judah Lo Ben Bezalel. I don't think I'm saying that right, but I want to say Judah Lo Ben Bezalel. And Judah Lo Ben Bezalel wrote one of the more famous narratives that involved the golem. And this is the kind of narrative where the golem was created to protect the people of Prague from persecution, you know, from being attacked for being Jewish. And the story itself mutates in other versions after this point. Like many stories, there's always that fanfic. And there were other slightly different versions of this. So there are versions of the story where the golem merely protects the Jewish people of Prague. And then there are versions of the story where the golem goes crazy, you know, from power, from some sort of rage, and just kills a bunch of people. So the golem is a bit of a tricky figure in even the Jewish mythology. It's not absolutely good or evil, is my point. And again, I'm not an expert on this. I use it as an example, maybe as a kind of keystone or pivot point for a conversation about the modern state of Israel. But here's the thing. When Theodor Herzl and people like Theodor Herzl 150 years ago were concerned about the state of Jews in Europe, there was a lot of anti-Semitism or hatred towards the Jews. And almost all of it was pretty crazy and irrational. You know, it was simply the case that whether you were in France or what was becoming Germany at the time, or you lived in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, no matter where you lived in Western Europe or Central Europe, there was a lot of anti-Semitism, and Jewish people had to live separate. Or also, and this is important, Jewish people tended to enclave separately. So this was the thing. I don't think this is a simple issue. It's kind of like looking at the Amish. You know, Amish people currently, in my opinion, are a kind of canary in the coal mine for globalism and the New World Order. I know this may seem like a kind of random tangent, but it's not. Amish people do not embrace, and although this is changing some, in general they don't embrace a lot of the modern precepts of progress and technology. They tend to eschew a lot of the technology and ways of outsiders. And so by enclaving themselves, by isolating themselves, they create a separation. And it's on purpose. This is not something that Amish people are forced into. In essence, they choose to live this way. And from my perspective, rightly so. I mean, you know, if you've listened to any of my podcasts, you know that I'm basically a philosophical anarchist that lives in the real world, that lives in a prison state. And so even though I might believe in total freedom, I don't live in a world of total freedom. I live in a world where force and bullies and magical crocodiles, which I call government, kind of rule my life. And, you know, the best thing I can do is throw some meat at the magical crocodile and try to avoid it as much as possible. But in terms of achieving an existence of total freedom, mostly what I find I do these days and others do is I try to hold on to what few freedoms I have left. and avoid those things that remind me of what freedoms I no longer have. So I don't really fly much. If I can avoid flying, I don't fly much. Now, this isn't really enclaving like the Amish, but yeah, the reason why I don't fly is I hate the TSA. I hate being treated like a piece of shit. I hate the idea that we have gotten to the point where we're trading our freedom for security, and we must know that it doesn't really work, and yet we still do it. So I hate it. It's a reminder of how this nation is becoming less free over time. So the Amish people enclave themselves. Well, it could be argued, and I don't want to make a superficial argument, but it could be argued that when it comes to insider-outsider dynamics in terms of society, many, many groups choose as one strategy to survive as an outsider to enclave themselves culturally, geographically, to create separate communities, even within other communities. This is not special to Amish people. It's not really special to Dan Sullivan's weird choices about whether he wants to fly or not. And it isn't particularly special to Jewish people. But you could argue that Jewish culture in Europe for a very long time was very much an isolated culture. And only to the extent that Jewish people felt that they could participate in the wider society did they do so. And even then, it could be dangerous for them. Now, there is the greater conspiracy involving the Rothschilds and banking, and I really don't want to go into that for a couple of reasons. One, I'm not an expert on it. Two, I have come to be more understanding of all sides of that issue. I do not think a person is anti-Semitic because they question power. And if the person in power happens to be Jewish, who gives a fuck? It isn't the Jewishness of the problem that people are upset about. It's the power. You know, in general, power is one of the worst things a human being can be attracted to. Of all the terrible obsessions, of all the things that can cause a human being to go off their wheels, power is one of the worst. And you could say, well, Dan, isn't power sometimes necessary? I can think of a couple, maybe only one good example, and that's being a parent. When you're a parent, you do exert power over your kid. And it isn't just the power to say, do this and don't do that. It's the power of, where does the food come from? Where does the shelter come from? Where does the water come from? As a parent, you exert power, but yeah, with great power comes great responsibility. So as a parent, sure, you run a kind of tyranny. That's being realistic, you do. But that's because your kids are dependent upon you. And one of those great moments, I suppose, I'm not a parent, and I probably will never be one, but probably one of the greatest moments in a parent's life is when they realize, and it may not be one day or one week, it could be a period of time, but when a parent comes to realize that their kids are standing on their own two feet. In fact, better yet, their kids are saying, go to hell, mom, go to hell, dad, I'm going to choose my own way. And yeah, guess what? They'll choose their own way, and sometimes they'll succeed, and sometimes they'll fail. But the fact that they're choosing to be their own people, that they no longer need the tyranny, that's a sign of maturity. That's a sign of growing up. So yeah, I despise power in any form, with, I suppose, one exception, and that's the power that parents have over their kids. But even then, you have to be fucking careful. I mean, I am very skeptical of people who want to step into people's families and tear them apart because they have some social theory that says the parents are bad parents. I think it's shitty to split up families because parents don't want to vaccinate their kids, and I do not want to get into the issue of vaccination. Talk about muddy, stupid fucking topics. Vaccination is one of the muddiest, stupidest topics people get caught up in. I don't want to talk about it. But the bottom line is this. Even though I can understand the power of the parent, and I can understand the desire, or I shouldn't say desire, I can understand the need to exert power, it doesn't mean that power should have no limits. So yeah, you know, when I think about the modern state of Israel, the state of Israel that begins in 1948, but has that whole history of folks moving to Palestine, moving to that part of the world, the Balfour Declaration, for example, all of these events that happened in the 50 years, plus or minus, that preceded 1948, these are all part of the story too. And to simplify the story, this is a story of people who felt persecuted in Russia, felt persecuted in Western and Central Europe, felt persecuted all around the world, and they decided to adopt a philosophy, the main proponent of which was Theodor Herzl, called Zionism. And core to that philosophy was the establishment of a place, a country, a nation where Jewish people could live without being attacked. As an anarchist, as someone who wishes he had his own land like that, a place where he could live and simply be free, I understand it. I get it. The desire to find a kind of homeland and community of people with a common vision and a desire to survive with their own dignity and freedom intact, I totally get it. So on that level, I can understand the desire to want to create Israel. The problem develops, in my opinion, and this is why this is a very sticky subject, is that Israel, instead of being simply a safe place for Jewish people, became something else. And I do think it became, on one level, a kind of golem. You know, the golem in Jewish mythology is created to fight off enemies, but the golem, like all monsters, can turn on its creator. There are lots and lots of Jewish people who live in Israel today who do not agree with the persecution of the Palestinians. Okay? There are many events in the years leading up to the establishment of Israel that are called massacres and situations where Jews were killed. Here's the thing to consider, though, about these cases where Jewish people were killed. Those numbers are tiny compared to the number of Palestinians through starvation, through deprivation, through lack of access to modern medicine, through constant bombing, through direct killing from bombing. There are many more Palestinians that have been killed by Israel. And yet, in this particular case, no one's pulling on your heartstrings to say, well, should you care about them? In fact, in American media, the story of Palestine barely gets discussed. You know, even under quote-unquote Obama, the so-called, enemy of Israel, which was total bullshit, even under Obama, Palestine gets short shrift. And that applies for much of, contemporary history going back to the establishment of modern Israel. So if you asked a Palestinian what Israel was, is it an angel or a golem? I'm sure that answer is pretty fucking simple. It's a monster. And it's a monster that might have been created for good reasons, just like the Golem of Prague. You know, the good old rabbi decided to go down to the river and perform some magic, some ancient Hebrew magic, and fashion out of the mud a monster to defend the Jewish people. And that's really great. I mean, it's good to want to defend yourself. It's good to want to defend the people you care about. But it goes bad so quickly if it becomes merely another kind of pursuit for power. That's the thing about the golem. The golem, in many ways, is a representation of power. And it's why you have to be careful. Israel came into existence in 1948, officially. By 1962, they were already refining materials for nuclear weapons. Now that, you can do your own math, is 14 years. 14 years. After Israel came into existence, they were already fashioning the technology to build nuclear bombs. And yeah, was there some conflict with the Arabs between 48 and, 62? Yes, there was some conflict. One could argue that it was, 50-50, especially if you include the invasion of Egypt by Israel in 1956, as part of a the Suez Crisis, but the best you can say is both sides are guilty. You can't say, well, the Arabs forced the Israelis to build nukes. That's bullshit. So why is it 14 years after the establishment of Israel, why is it they're building nuclear weapons? Okay, why are they doing that? Now you could say, well, Dan, maybe Egypt and, I don't know, Saudi Arabia and Iran and Iraq and Syria, all these countries, they were going to build nukes. You know, oh, I always forget the guy's name, but Nasser, you know, and the Arab League, you know, they could say, well, Nasser is talking the talk in Egypt, and he's talking about a kind of unified Arab response, and it just looks all militaristic, Dan. We had to build nukes. This is the common argument. This, in many ways, is the common argument for all pursuits of power, for all golems, everywhere. Every golem that's ever been created, and I just don't mean the traditional Jewish golem, but I mean every time someone's created a monster to solve a problem, they generally then realize many years later that the monster was worse than the problem they were trying to solve. You know, here's the other problem with this issue of Israel, is that if you're not pro-Israel, then you must be an anti-Semite. And what's really funny is that seems to apply to people who have a Jewish background. Like, there are lots of folks who are kind of anti-Israel and also Jewish. Those people do exist. You may not think they do, but they do. There are people that look at the modern state of Israel and they kind of see the same thing. They see a kind of monster that's out of control. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this is as much as I want to say about this, but I guess I get disturbed because this is one of those issues that we cannot talk about. It is a forbidden subject. We can talk about all sorts of heinous bullshit in America today. But what we can't talk about is our kind of uninterrupted support for the state of Israel. Like, we've gone through periods of time where we supported various countries. We supported Saddam Hussein at one point, believe it or not. We helped supply, in the 80s, Saddam Hussein with all the technology and components to build chemical weapons. That was us, okay? That was the United States. That was the CIA. That was Donald Rumsfeld. That was us. We supplied Saddam Hussein with the technology to commit mass murder. Now, you could say, well, Dan, they were fighting the Iranians, and the Iranians were more evil. And folks, maybe that's true, maybe that's false. But again, in the great questions of power and golems, it's kind of irrelevant if the golem comes back and attacks you later. So we as a country have a history of supporting nations and then not supporting them. We supported General Manuel Noriega for a very long time. We supported Noriega in Panama because he helped us, you know, essentially with all of the money laundering that was related to the Contras in Nicaragua. They helped us with CIA drug money laundering. It was a convenient relationship. And then when it stopped being so, we stopped supporting him. And then furthermore, we invaded Panama. Not once since 1948 have we done anything even remotely equivalent to that with Israel. And that's, you know, lest we forget the 1967 Six-Day War, okay, the war between Israel and Egypt. During that war, the USS Liberty, that's an American ship, which you would think, given that barely 19 years earlier, America had stood up for Israel and essentially been one of the nations that supported it in coming to existence, you would think that the Israeli military, being so fucking smart and filled with so many intelligent people, would be able to prevent, I don't know, what is it, 34 dead people, 34 dead crew members, and 171 wounded, multiple air attacks and torpedo attacks. Listen, if you make one mistake firing on a ship, okay, but when you make multiple mistakes in a row and the radio operator is telling you, please stop, in fucking English, then it seems to me that maybe an intelligent military of highly skilled fucking experts would stop. USS Liberty incident, the 8th of June, 1967, stinks. If the same kind of bullshit had happened with another one of our quote-unquote allies, one of our allies tearing up, blowing up one of our ships, I think that that relationship would get deeply strained. In the case of Israel, it seems like they just get more of our money. I mean, I was reading about the payouts that the Israeli government did to make up for, to apologize for what happened. But if you consider how dwarfed they are compared to how much money the Israelis were getting from us, it's absurd. All they were doing was taking money from US taxpayers and paying the Navy and the bereaved and the widows money they were getting from us. It's fucking absurd. Okay? The Israelis attacked a ship. The ship was a United States naval ship. They killed more than 30 people. They wounded more than 150. There were multiple attacks, not just one attack. I'm not saying this was premeditated, but as mistakes go, this is a pretty fucking stupid mistake. And supposedly, we were their great, great ally. You would think, using just a little bit of common sense, that you would keep track of your allies. If you call yourself a government, a state, let me be even more specific about the incident involving the Liberty. If you're a government that thinks it has a right to fucking nuclear weapons, and keep in mind this is an anarchist talking, all you governments are bullshit. But if you're a fucking government that thinks it has a right to have and deploy nuclear weapons, yeah, I think accidental attacks on a ship of your ally, that doesn't happen. And if it does, it isn't 30 killed and 170 wounded. It isn't multiple weapons released. It isn't torpedo boats and air attacks. So yeah, the whole thing fucking stinks, if you ask me. The modern state of Israel does not seem like what Theodor Herzl envisioned. In fact, I'm gonna defend Herzl's vision. If Herzl were alive today and he saw the modern state of Israel, he would probably vomit. He would come to the realization, as some crazy rabbi in 16th century Prague might come to the realization, that when you create a golem, it often turns into a fucking monster. It turns on everyone, including you. And in all this, you have to remember, questioning the modern state of Israel makes you an anti-Semite. Questioning whether or not the United States should treat that nation as an ally means you hate Jewish people. That's kind of the message. If you want to know the nature of a true monster, because monsters aren't just about uncontrolled power. Listen, a tidal wave is uncontrolled power, an earthquake is uncontrolled power. Avalanches, volcanic eruptions, these are all forms of power without control. Okay? I wouldn't necessarily call these monsters, though, but these are all forms of power without control. The thing about creating power like this is it will turn on you. This is dark. This is evil. The modern state of Israel is not our friend, it is not a force for peace. And it's only a democracy to the extent that there's a group of people in Israel who are considered citizens and can vote. But if you consider all of the quote-unquote outsiders, the refugees, even the people who consider themselves Jewish but aren't Jewish enough, so the only way they can live there, and I believe this still happens, is if they basically undergo, essentially, involuntary sterilization. I mean, there's shit that goes on in Israel today involving immigrants that, if it happened here, we would say, oh, we're Nazis. We're Nazis. Or you're saying we're sterilizing people who want to become American citizens? Well, guess what? That kind of stupid, heinous fucking shit happens in Israel. I am not going to claim the Palestinians are perfect. I won't claim the Arabs are perfect. I've said this before, I'll say this again. The number one force for evil in the world is government. If you want to find all the chaos, if you want to get angry about chaos and violence, don't blame anarchists. Don't say anarchy. Okay? If you see a bombed out fucking building, that probably wasn't an anarchist. That was probably an F-16 carrying gravity bombs. Okay? Just getting it fucking real here for you for a second. If you do not like the fact that the US seems to be the lapdog of Israel, you are an anti-Semite. If you question the outcomes of the modern state of Israel, you are an anti-Semite. If Theodor Herzl's ghosts, ghost or somehow wasn't a ghost, if he arrived in a time machine and he saw the state of Israel today and saw how Israel treated its own people and treated its neighbors, he would probably say things that would get him labeled as an anti-Semite. Anyways, I'm sure I just got in trouble with this podcast, so I'll leave it there. But yeah, if you ask me, the modern state of Israel is a golem.